American citizens should vote in American elections. Which is why the time has come for voter ID, like everything else. Voter ID. You know, if you go out and you want to buy groceries, you need a picture on a card. You need ID.
So that particular clip is being compared to back when George H.W. Bush was running for president, and he didn't understand how the supermarket checkouts worked. Oh my God. And it made him look wildly out of touch. And during that time, people said, oh, he can't relate to us. And yeah, it probably cost him a second term. But now we're in a much different place where we look at the dude who clearly has no connection to us, has no idea what we're going through, and thinks that you need an ID to buy groceries. Now, if you're buying alcohol, yeah, you might need ID for that. Of course, you don't, sir, because, you know, you look your age. But otherwise, you don't need an ID. And this is the argument that's been put forth. You need an ID for this. You need an ID for that. But for voting, see, we need an affirmative right to vote. Absolutely written into law. And I get a fair amount of disagreement on this, but I'm going to go ahead and say it anyway. If you are in this country and you are affected by the policies that are enacted by our politicians, that is, for me, that is all you need to be able to vote. If you're going to be affected by what they do in Washington, D.C., you should get to vote. Of course, a fair amount of conservatives have a whole different idea. If you're brown, you should not get to vote. If you're a woman who wants control over her own body, you should not get to vote. And so on and so forth. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for being here on the Fire You Can't Put Out, episode number 261. Super duper excited to be here. Going to begin the show today by talking about one of my favorite topics, and that is economics. I would love to tease the rest of the show for you, but once again, I plan these damn things out, and I never know where they're going to land. Oh! This is going to be exciting. Let's do this together.
Had the Democrat won, the stock market is up almost 50% since my election. Had the Democrat won, I believe you would have been down 50%. That's the direction we were headed.
So things are great a little bit for us, a lot of bit if you're super duper rich. Those guys are getting checks in the mail from the government right now, which, once again, that's another thing that conservatives used to be against, but now that it's going to millionaires and billionaires, we're kind of okay with that. Housing seems to be leveling off a little bit. I was talking with my father recently, who's trying to sell a house, and within 2 hours, he had an offer on his house. And of course, that offer did not last more than a week or so, and then the people pulled their money. It's an interesting place to be because I get these things in the mail saying how valued my house, how overvalued, honestly, my house is. I said, there's no way that's going to sustain. And I believe that I'm starting to see the bottom fall out of it right now. There was a story in the Spokesman Review out of Spokane, and it said that they are going to start artificially bringing prices down. Now, prices for housing are supposed to be set by the market, whatever the market can bear, whatever people can afford. That's how housing prices are supposed to be set. But the realtors in Spokane, Washington have said, well, there's so many people that can't get in to the game that we would like for them to be in the housing game. They mean they've been scared off because, you know, they got to overbid on a house. So we're going to artificially bring the price down. So that's the official explanation. What do I read into it? They see prices about to come down very quickly on their own, and I think that they're beginning to hedge a little bit. Prices on everything, up to and including gasoline, have just been spiking recently. But because the black guy's not in there, there's not a whole lot of interest. So the story here from the Spokesman Review, consumer prices have climbed 2.9% from a year earlier, a rate of inflation that suggests Americans are earning less than a year ago despite an otherwise solid economy. The Labor Department said the consumer price index ticked up 0.2% in July. Annual inflation included the 2.9% pace from June, which had been the highest level since February 2012. Core prices, which exclude the volatile food and energy categories, rose 0.2% in June and 2.4% from a year earlier. Core prices have risen at the fastest annual pace since 2008. One of the things that I've never particularly understood about how they measure inflation is that it does not include gasoline and food, which is amazing because we don't have food without gasoline. And if gasoline goes up a little bit, food automatically goes up. And those are the two biggest things that we buy. One of the things that gets measured, though, is tech, which is fine. Quite a few of us use tech. But then there's some segments of our economy that use little to no tech. The way that we measure consumer prices, the consumer price index, probably should change. But these are the numbers that we have for now. We're at full employment. Not just full employment. There are jobs that are going begging for workers right now. Yet our wages, our real wages are not going up. So what's going on? We were told that if we simply gave these gigantic tax cuts to millionaires and billionaires, that money would trickle down. We've been on a good trajectory for a long time, since the crash of 2008, 10 years ago, late last decade. We've been on this great trajectory, and so we're now, what I believe, at the very top of that. So the ascend up, and then the descend down. But even though we're there, and we've done all the things they told us to do, the tax cuts for the billionaires and the lesser regulation, so where has all that money gone? The Republicans just gave $1 trillion away, a little more than $1 trillion away to all their friends. And yet our wages aren't going up. What's going on? The millionaires and billionaires, they decided with their money to buy back their stock. Recent numbers that I've read is somewhere in the neighborhood of 75% of the windfall that they got from that tax cut, they've decided to buy back their own stock. What does buying back their own stock do? Because post-Reagan, you're allowed to pay your CEO with stock options, the CEO now gets way more money in his paycheck, or his portfolio is worth a lot more, which he can then, or he or she, generally a he, can cash out at any time. So CEOs have gotten richer. Also stockholders. A lot of us like to think of ourselves as stockholders. They talk about how the NASDAQ and the S&P and all that's doing. I hear the news at the top of the hour. They say, here's the major stories. Here's the weather. You know, crime this, Trump that. Oh, and here's what the stock market is doing. The overwhelming majority of us are not invested in the stock market. And those of us that are working people, really aren't that heavily invested. Yet, as a part of our regular news, top of the hour, we always hear about the stocks. The stock market does something gigantic, we hear about it. Although, it doesn't, most of us are not in the stock market. So why do we hear about that? Because it's important to super duper rich people. And when they listen to poor people's radio with you, they would like to hear how their stocks are doing. And the people that do own stock, say own stock in Apple, who bought back a whole bunch of their own shares, and Sony and all the rest, all these companies that just use their money, use their windfall, they just buy back their own stock. CEOs got way richer. Stockholders got way richer. And you and I are doing the same job for less money now. This is conservative economics. Well, allow me to qualify that. This is the current state of conservative economics. The word conservative generally meant, historically, being more conscious. But now, it means screwing you if you are a working person.
We can't do that because we'd be upsetting the president of the United States. I can't believe it. But no. Gosh, we might poke the bear. It's a language I've been hearing in the hallways. We might poke the bear. The president might get upset with us. The United States Senate right now on June the 12th is becoming a body where, well, we'll do what we can do, but my gosh, if the president gets upset with us, then we might not be in the majority.
If you are a Republican and you are critical of the current president, it is a very lonely, lonely, lonely place to be. And if you want to run for re-election and you want to criticize him, you may as well just pull your card now because you're not going to get re-elected. And it's true. He's very powerful within the Republican Party right now. Donald Trump is. He's very powerful. When he endorses a Republican, there's a pretty solid chance that that Republican is going to win their primary. The general's a different story, but they're likely going to win their primary because he has that whole white power party in the palm of his hand right now. It's pretty amazing watching them be led by a moron, but I suppose, and I know I'm name calling, sorry, it's below me, I know, but I suppose in the land of the blind, a man with one eye is indeed the king. And why do they cling to him? Jobs, right? There's this thing going on right now where we're pretending that things have just been so bad for the past, oh, when did Bush stop being president? 10 years. Things have been so bad. So bad for the last 10 years. My goodness gracious, it's been so bad for the last 10 years. Last time anything was any good was the last time that we had a Republican president. My God, it's been so bad for the last 10 years. But then, in November 2016, all the jobs came roaring back. You hear the president say this all the time. November 2016 was when all the jobs started coming roaring back. And why did they come roaring back? Because Obama was still president? See, it's a crap timeline, but it sounds good, right? Because obviously the president becomes president on election night, right? He flies up to the White House. He kicks out the current occupant. He starts signing bills and all the rest, right? That's what happens. It's the way it's historically always. No, that's not the way it happens. What we're on right now is the same trajectory that we have been on since, I want to say, well, for me, man, I had to move. I had to move from where I was living in 2011 because the effects, I mean, things were getting better at that time, but there was still a ton of fallout. You know, there were still, for my wife that works in a school, they were still shedding jobs. And then I had a hard time finding a job because, yeah, things are coming back, but my job still wasn't back. But I would say things really started getting better 2010, 2011, but I wouldn't say that they were really measurably great until 2012, 2013, but it's the ascent. It's the upline. I mean, things were getting better. And they've been on that same trend line ever since. So I'm curious what the explanation would have been. Because with the same numbers that we have now, and by the way, when conservatives go, this is all because Donald Trump is so great, these same numbers that we have now, I think we would have had no matter who is in there. Because go to one of your conservative friends, and when they say, this is all because Donald Trump is so great, November 2016. When they say that, say, excuse me, specifically, what has he done that has brought us here? What did things look like before he became president? Ask about trend lines and all that stuff. See how bright they are. And say, what specifically has he done that brought us to this point, that is making things go as well as they are? What specifically? And by the way, just talking about how great he is, it's not awesome for the economy. Actually, it's probably quite the opposite. Just ask him, what did he really do that brought us to this point? We're still kind of on the same trend line. If you want to know what the Trump economy is really going to look like, you're starting to see it now. Because these tax cuts, everyone sees them for what they are. They're not at all popular. And realizing that the Republicans might be out of power soon, might be, that's up to you. Realizing that they might be out of power soon, they're already talking about another multi-billion dollar tax cut, passing another tax cut through. When times are good, you raise taxes. When times are bad, you lower taxes. You do not lower taxes during good times. It doesn't make any sense. That make good economic sense. You don't need a stimulus. And tax cuts aren't the best stimulus anyway. What you really need is the old FDR thing. You know, if everybody's out of work, employer becomes the government becomes the employer of last resort. You pay a man to dig a hole, you pay a man to fill a hole. You put money into his pocket, he spends it somewhere. Multiplier effect, the economy comes back. You're not just handing them the money. So there's value there. So tax cuts not working, not popular. What's the other thing? Vanguard, which is the financial house. I've full disclosure, I've got money invested in Vanguard. Then again, so do a million other people. I think they are or millions of other people. I think they're probably the single most popular financial investment house right now. They do a lot of retirement accounts. I believe they do stocks. I don't get into stocks, but retirement accounts I definitely do because I don't plan on working forever. They put out a report recently about what they expect your rate of return to be. So investing by its very nature is long term. You say, someone says, invest in this, you're going to make, 15% back in a year. A year is that's not investing. And 15%, if you're making 15% on an investment, someone's getting screwed down the line. You might be in a pyramid or any number of other schemes. A good rate of return is usually in the single digits. And usually. But if you can sometimes see 10%. But it's usually quite a bit less. So things go up, things go down. Sometimes the rate of return over a short period may be 12, 13%. Or it may be on the other end. So the average in any decade-long period, okay, and by the way, this is educated speculation, not on my part, on the part of Vanguard. Pick any 10-year period, and with your investments going up and your investments going down, you might end up somewhere in the 9 or 10% category over the long term. They put out a report recently, and they said, what do you expect people to make back on their money over the next decade? Vanguard's number? 4%. We're talking about a decade here. Yeah, but 4%. Huh. So if you can reasonably expect something higher, 8, 9, maybe even 10, during any other historical period, but what's coming up in this next decade is only 4%, that would suggest to me that there's a gigantic drop somewhere along the line. These things go up and down. And Vanguard can see that. But what causes that? Well, there's generally never, ever a single cause. But for me, if I may inject my opinion, and you're clearly listening, so you probably don't mind if I do, I think that's where we're really going to have to pay for the tax cuts. And of course, the Federal Reserve isn't engaged in quantitative easing anymore. I mean, they were holding down all of these interest rates after the 2008 crash, and it worked for a little bit. But they're starting to pull out of that now. And I think that is going to make the economy have to, fortunately or unfortunately, however you see it, stand on its own two legs. Economics and investing is a long-term game. The way our elections work are very short-term. House member every, new House members every 2 years, new senators every 6, presidents every 4 or 8 if they get 2 terms. And so the way that we tend to understand our economics is in those really short terms because we tend to look at our politicians and say, they're doing this or they're doing that and that's the way things are. But we really need to look at things on a much larger timeline. And yeah, the politicians do have a lot to do with it. And when we talk about things like tax cuts, which, by the way, never work. It's not that they have no effect. They clearly do. But they don't really work out in the long term. And that's the problem. We need to think about all these things in the long term. And I think the Republicans are playing a short-term game. Because if they can get in and get their tax cuts like they just did, make themselves, make all their friends a couple billion dollars, then they, because people realize the vast majority of them can't govern, get kicked out of office. And this is just the way it goes. And this trend line that was already in place because of the tax cuts, things start dropping off. Things start going downhill. And they go, oh, well, we kicked the Republicans out. And look at this downward trend line. Oh, we got to put the Republicans back in. And we play this stupid, stupid game. Unfortunately, well, I love economics. Most people don't. But I think we all need a better understanding of it. Because I think if we have a better understanding of economics, we'll make better decisions. And it's not a Democratic or Republican thing necessarily. Although I will say that the current iteration of the Republican Party, I don't think they're ignorant on economics. I think they know. But they're playing this short game because this short game is really working out for them really well. If the Democrats come in November and that trend that is being predicted by Vanguard begins happening, people are going to go, oh, dang gum, Democrats. But that's not the way it works. See, we're already on that downward trend no matter who wins. And then, of course, if the Republicans can manage to hold either the House or the Senate or both, and that trend line happens, they might just make something up. And I hear this all the time, like, well, people were afraid the Democrats are going to come in and they started pulling their money. And that's why there's a downward trend. There'll be an upward trend. And then they'll inject money into the economy because they don't really mind spending money. They just hate when Democrats spend money. For whatever reason, the reason people picked Donald Trump is because they said he's going to bring the jobs. He's going to bring the coal jobs. He's going to get my job back from that wetback. Or however Republicans talk, I don't pretend to understand. But what's happening now is the jobs are there, but it's because we're on the exact same trajectory. But the fact that wages aren't going up, if you want to give him and his Republican enablers credit for something, you can give them credit for that. So this by Josh Bullock over at the AP, the headline, Jobs boom favors Democratic counties, not the Trump strongholds. This from Monaco, Pennsylvania. The United States is on pace to add about 2.6 million jobs this year under Trump's watch. Yet the bulk of the hiring has occurred in bastions of Democratic voters rather than the Republican counties that put Trump in the White House. Let me walk away from this article for just a second. AP is one of my favorite news sources because it's not a bunch of opinion pieces. I like reading the opinion pieces. I was listening to Clark Howard talk the other day. He doesn't like opinion pieces at all. He only reads straight up news. Well, I like to know what's in people's hearts sometimes. And you can really get, when you read the letters to the editor, when you read editorials, you can really get a sense of where people are at. And I talk about how I personally feel all the time, and I like to know how other people personally feel. But for the most part, I really prefer straight up news, and that's why I tend to like AP a lot. Back to the article. On average, the year ended this May. 58.5% of the job gains were in counties that backed Democrat Hillary Clinton in 2016, according to an Associated Press analysis of monthly government jobs data by county. Despite an otherwise robust national economy, the analysis shows that a striking number of Trump counties are losing jobs. The AP found that 35.4% of Trump counties have shed jobs in the past year, compared with just 19.2% of Clinton counties, so almost half. The jobs data shows an economy that is as fractured as the political landscape ahead of the 2018 midterm elections, as more money pools in such corporate hubs as Houston, San Francisco, or Seattle. Prosperity spills over less and less to the smaller towns and cities in America's interior. That would seem to undercut what Trump sees as a central accomplishment in his administration: job creation for the middle class and blue-collar workers in towns far removed from the bustling urban centers. So, I want to add something to this. I think one of the best jobs programs that we can have is an education, whether that be a college education or whether that be a trade education. So New York University, just caught this on the news yesterday, announced to the incoming students this year, their medical students, this year, that they are not going to have to pay their tuition, which can be, for a medical student, $55,000 a year. And they said, no. 'Tis far more important to have these folks with these jobs rather than to make a bunch of freaking money off of them. So what has been happening in the medical field is if you're a doctor or a lawyer, which are high paying, very prestigious, you tend to get out of school with $200 on the low end, sometimes $300,000 in debt. The kind of money that you should be putting towards a house, you now have to put towards your education. And they say, well, we should just hold down the prices. Whoa. We can't hold down the prices for college when colleges remain for profit. And if these banks are in between the colleges and the kids, they're there to make money too. So if the name of the game is money, you're never going to hold down prices. And I think that this thing that happened with New York University, we're going to see more and more. And in the medical field, we don't have a lot of folks that are going into family practice. In a lot of areas in the country, such as these Trump counties in the interior of America, they don't have as many family practice doctors, because if somebody graduates with $300,000 in debt, taking a $110,000 a year job as a family practice doctor, you know, at like a 6.8% rate on your loan, on your school loan, you're never going to get that damn thing paid off. So they tend to go into specialty fields, things that pay, you know, $200,000 or $300,000 a year, which then they can pay their loans off even faster. And then once they're there, they I'm here now, I just stay here. I remember seeing an ad by GE a little while back about how they make these monitors, right, for doctors in the inner city to be able to see somebody in the country. What they do is they go out to the sticks, as it were, and they just put these monitors out there. And then you, out there in the sticks, you just talk to the monitor, but you're talking to a doctor that's in New York City or whatever, and he's just going to diagnose you from there, and that's our solution. What? No, the solution is to give these kids an education. And yeah, I say give, and I'm not going to say free, because it's not free. It costs money, and it costs lots and lots of money. But that's a much better program, and that's going to get money into – that's going to get the education in their heads, and that's going to get money into their pockets. And when they get money in their pockets, then they start paying taxes. And this is just the way economies work. This is the way normal functioning economies work. But we have this thing going on where we don't really care somebody gets educated. But we do care they got a little money in their pocket. And they've been sold the idea that they have to have an education. Because since they believe that, they're going to be willing to pay just about anything to get that education. And I think kids think about, and I say kids, they say, hey, it's fine. When I get out of college, I'm going to make all this money. But when you run the numbers, you're going to be a debt slave for the rest of your life. That doesn't work out that great for anybody. And so Trump talked about, and he still talks about, he's bringing back coal jobs. He's going to bring back all these jobs that nobody, he's going to bring back cassette manufacturing facilities. He's going to bring back ATM manufacturing facilities. He's bringing back the car phone. Manufacturing, okay. And if you're dumb, that sounds like a great line. But if you're not, you realize the jobs of the future are in medicine. People are always going to be sick. Are in health. Are in technology. Are in IT. Those are the jobs of the future. You really want to get people involved. You really want people to feel like they've got some skin in the game. You really want people to start making money. You really want to have a good jobs program. Then what you need is that. You need the jobs of the future. And this is a constantly changing thing. And I understand that change sucks. We don't like change. Fine. I get it. Trust me, I get it. But we have to adapt. We've made it this far as human beings by being adaptive creatures, and that kind of thing just needs to continue.
I am the Koch brothers' brother from another mother. Yes. I'm their brother from another mother. And proud of it.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, we're gonna get back into this in just a minute. We're gonna take a teeny tiny little break, and then we're gonna move more into I'll get into race, I'll get into economics, I'll get into asbestos. There's other things I'm gonna talk about, and I appreciate you indulging me for the last half an hour or so for economics with Melvin.
So why must we always concentrate on color or religion or this? There are other ways of connecting men.
So why must once you turn your back on this society, you may die. I don't know what most white people in this country feel, but I can only include what they feel from the state of their institutions. I don't know if white Christians hate Negroes or not, but I know that we have a Christian church which is white and a Christian church which is black. I don't know whether the labor unions and their bosses really hate me. That doesn't matter, but I know I'm not in their unions. I don't know if the real estate lobby is anything against black people, but I know the real estate lobbies keep me in the ghetto. I don't know if the Board of Education hates black people, but I know the textbooks they give my children to read and the schools that we have to go to. Now, this is the evidence. You want me to make an act of faith, risking myself, my wife, my woman, my sister, my children, on some idealism which you assure me exists in America, which I have never seen.
So that's author James Baldwin, who was a poor fella, during a time of the civil rights struggle in America was not only black, but gay. And of course, the reason we still know so much about him today is because he was absolutely brilliant. So if you listen to that clip, it opens with somebody asking him a question. That's sort of a town hall setting. And obviously, that the conservative of that time is really the same as the conservative of this time. I will hear conservatives, "I don't see color. I see the content, the character." They'll try to do the whole MLK thing. No, you do. You see color. And they'll go, "No, I don't, and I don't know why you do." Why I do. And as James Baldwin points out there, he says, sure, there's not an explicit expression. There aren't ads coming on television saying that, you know, that we are only going to hire white people. He says, but if I go out for the job, I happen to notice that the place is full of white people and I don't get the job. And there are not churches that say right on the outside, black church and white church. But he sees that there are churches that are overwhelmingly black, churches that are overwhelmingly white. And then he goes into the realtors and all the rest. And he says, yeah, there's not an explicit expression, but there's a clear divide in America. And these people go towards their own, and they see their own place. That's where they land. And he says, but you want me, sir, as a black man, to stop seeing that because you don't see it that way. And aha, there it is. Segregation in America isn't as explicit as it once was, but it is definitely as prevalent as it ever was. And it's pretty clear. And I was born into little small town white America, but I was only there very briefly. It took me absolutely no time to land in the ghetto in Logan Heights, San Diego, and it became pretty clear to me right away that I was kind of different. I'll never forget the first time I saw my reflection in the mirror, because really up to that point it was just a whole lot of sort of looking around and seeing everybody's black. I can't say for certain. I don't remember what my mindset was at that time, but I might have thought for a brief period that maybe I was black too. And then I remember, this is so ridiculous, I can't believe I'm telling this story, but I remember the first time I saw myself in the mirror. I saw my face and I go, Am I Asian? It sounds stupid, but see, there were Asian people that lived in our neighborhood too. And looking at my facial structures, I go, oh, am I Asian? Of course I'm not. I asked my mom. She goes, no, we're white. You know, you're half Indian. What's the other half? Oh, I don't know. I later found out it's Irish. Fine, whatever. But I go, I'm white. And in this neighborhood, everybody's black. And why is that? As a young man, I never understood. And my mom was not brilliant and didn't explain it to me. As I got older, I started to realize that this segregation, this is by design. When we have things like the projects, this is by design. Black people living in these overwhelmingly underprivileged neighborhoods. This is absolutely by design. And yeah, when you drive into, you know, Market Street in San Diego, it doesn't say black neighborhood, you know. And when you drive up into the hills, you know, and say, you know, down by the marina or, you know, any of those areas, it doesn't say white neighborhood. But if you go in to those ritzy areas in the hilltop, I remember this happened with New Orleans. They said the lower ninth ward is drowning. And you see all these black people on TV drowning. And they say, it's not affecting the people up in the hills. Well, who the hell lives up in the hills? Ah, all the rich white people. So when you go up into the hills, there's not a sign that says white neighborhood. But it's pretty clear that that's a white neighborhood. You go down into the lower nine, and that's a black neighborhood. And when the floods come in, because of global warming, it's the black people that drown. And then the white people, they get to sit on top of the hill and go, hey, we got up here, bootstraps, buddy. Pull yourself up by your bootstraps. And that's what they always tell us. And so we say, it's pretty clear that the divide that is happening here in America, it seems that the African Americans are being put in this box, that we're being intentionally underprivileged. And they say, no, it's not. It's not true. And why do you have to see race? Why do I have to see race? Well, because of what Mr. Baldwin pointed out right there, is that these black neighborhoods seem to be overwhelmingly poor and in low-lying areas. And the white neighborhoods seem to be way up high, and they seem to have a lot more money. Although there's not an explicit policy, an explicit expression about who belongs where in this society, it's pretty clear that the design is doing exactly what it was intended to do, and that is to hold people apart based on race. The headline from Common Dreams, Insidious, emails show Trump White House lied about U.S. poverty levels to discredit a critical UN report. Quoting here, infuriated by a scathing United Nations report estimating that over 18 million Americans are living in extreme poverty and accusing the Trump administration of deliberately making such destitution worse with its tax cuts for the rich, the White House insisted in its June response to the UN analysis that the United States is overflowing with prosperity. Sorry. And claims that and that the claims of widespread poverty are exaggerated. This is not as dramatic as Trump's tweets or bald-faced lies at press briefings, but in a way, it is far more insidious. The contempt for facts is pervasive and maddening, that according to Jeff Greenfield. Internal state documents and emails obtained by Foreign Policy and the nonprofit journalism website CODA Story show that the Trump administration ignored advice of White House economic analysts, and knowingly lied to the public about the severity of American poverty, which the UN Special Rapporteur on Extreme Poverty and Human Rights, Philip Alston, described as shocking. Foreign Policy reported on Thursday that officials who were consulted last minute on a draft of the White House's rebuttal of the UN findings questioned the accuracy of the data that the administration was citing, despite the fact that the UN analysis cited government statistics to bolster its claims about poverty in America. The Trump administration opted to draw from a report by the Right Wing Heritage Foundation, which concluded that only 250,000 Americans are living in extreme poverty. The Heritage report, cited by the White House, also concluded that the conditions of the poor must be improving because many families living in deep poverty own cell phones and DVD players. Your jobs are not going to come back in coal country. Well, certainly not your coal jobs. And the Trump administration doesn't really care about helping you. And their policies, although they don't explicitly say we're here to help the rich, it's pretty clear that by design, that is the only thing that their policies are doing, is helping the super duper rich. But what he's telling you, and what quite a few of you, at least a third of America, has decided to believe, is that what he's saying to you is true. That he is bringing back your jobs, and he is building a wall, and he is curing cancer. And if anybody says any different, that's just the lying liberal media that just can't handle the truth. What's happening with poverty and race in America is not a mistake, and it is by design. And it is exacerbated. It's just exploded as of recently. And there's way more people living in poverty. The people that show up to his rallies, and I see the videos all the time, they are not doing that awesome. They're not rich. They don't show up in Benzes and Beamers. They're not going home to mansions. A lot of them are blue-collar workers. And yet they're turning to this guy, right? They've got jobs. And they're turning to this guy and they go, we need jobs. You have jobs. And they go, no, we don't. The Mexicans are taking them all. All right. So if you've got a job, you've got money to give to Trump, to the re-election commission. You got money to drive there. You got money to put clothes on your back. You know, you seem to be doing okay. I understand there's still a ton of poverty in Trump country, but the vast majority seem to be doing okay, but you're screaming that somebody's taking your jobs. See, you can't just go on TV and go, F the Mexicans, because no one's going to listen to you. No one's going to take you seriously. They're going to go, wow, you're just a racist. Okay, we're not listening to you. You can't go on TV and say, F the N-bombs and F the A's. You can't do that because nobody's going to listen to you. But if you go, my job was taken by a Mexican, then all of a sudden that sort of legitimizes what you say. For those of us that are in the know, that understand how this whole thing goes, we see, okay. We're at full employment. We're bursting with jobs right now, but you're still screaming that your jobs are being taken. Okay. Your jobs are not being taken. But what you do not particularly care for is the landscape of America. The landscape of America is changing. It's a little less white than it used to be. And that's freaking you out a little bit. And you've got this anxiety. And that's what holds President Dum-Dum there. Is these people that go, uh-uh. The problem isn't economics. The problem is all these brown people that we need these people the hell out of here. And of course, that's not going to play out that way. So what we have in the short term, before these folks figure out a way to kick everybody out that's not white, is we've got this economic segregation, where even though it's not explicit, it is implicit, and we've got the African Americans in the low-lying areas, which are going to be eaten up by the floods, and the super-duper wealthy living in the hills, where they just get to watch all the black bodies float by. And that's America.
Their own personal self-interest constantly. That's all we see on display consistently among Republicans who are choosing to prop up these lies and to devalue truth and factual accuracy in the American public. And it's really disgusting. I can't believe that we're at the phase where, you know, the $12 billion bailout for agriculture because of a dumb policy decision, and all of these so-called fiscal conservatives can just get behind it because they're going to go with Trump no matter what. And we're just seeing where people really do not stand for much except the ideology of power.
The tariffs have not been good for Trump country. They're losing a ton of money in Trump country. And although conservatives have usually balked at the idea of spending any money whatsoever because it's the dang gum government, when Trump says, well, I'm sorry that my policies with trade have screwed you all. How about I just give you all a bunch of freaking money? And then that becomes okay. Sure, there's a handful of farmers in Trump country that are saying, no, we would rather have the business rather than, you know, you cut us a check. So just, you know, get us some business. And we're behind you. We're behind you, Mr. President, all the way with these tariffs. So there's a bit of a disconnect there. But these yahoos in Trump country believe that he really cares for them. He's really looking out for them. God, his love runs deep and wide for you blue-collar people in Trump country. Deep and wide. But it doesn't. The name of his game is the name of a fair amount of conservative leaders. I won't say conservative voters because the whole majority of them are not rich. But the name of his game is the same for the Republican leaders. It's the same for corporate America. It's the same for CEOs. It's the same for all these companies that got billions of dollars back from the federal government. Don't have to pay taxes now. Don't have to pay for their infrastructure. Don't have to pay for schools and roads and bridges and police and fire. Don't have to pay for any of that stuff, even though they benefit from all of those protections. They took all that money and they just paid themselves tons and tons and tons and tons of money. So that's the name of the game. It's just money. But the Democrats, shut up. Go to hell. Seriously, turn the radio off. Go away. No one's listening to you. The name of the game is money. Simple and plain. And the headline goes like this. Oh, wait a second. Before I give you the headline, let me say, you've probably seen these ads running on TV about mesothelioma. And what that is if you worked around asbestos, those little particles can get into your lungs, right? Breathing that stuff in. We don't use it anymore because it's terribly dangerous. It's toxic and all the rest. And gets in your lungs. It cuts up your lungs. You die. You suffocate. You suffocate from mesothelioma. You die. You suffocate from, you suffer while you're alive and then you suffocate and you die. And that's why we don't use, and there's a lot of speculation about that's what happened at Ground Zero. Because that building was built, the Twin Towers were built when we used asbestos. And then, of course, when the towers come down, what ends up in the air? Asbestos. And now you got all these people with breathing problems. So number one thing, because they were told on Ground Zero, they go, no, it's cool, it's cool. You don't need a mask. Just go out there, just breathe in the air. You don't know, you'll be fine. And we've lost so many people. Dozens, you know, if not 100 or better, you know, just who lived, who survived the blast, helped out at Ground Zero, and now they're trying to get help because they breathe in this air at 9/11, and they likely breathe in asbestos, which cut up their lungs, and now they're on respirators and all the rest, and they're dying all the time, and they're asking the government to pay for their medical bills because they were told it was safe down at Ground Zero. I mean, asbestos is just nasty stuff, and we don't use it anymore. Well, not in America, we don't use it. But they still use it in Russia. And since the president is trying to bring back all of these things that we know are awful and do not work and are not great for us and are not healthy and are not helpful, since we're bringing all that stuff back, well, why not bring back asbestos? And this is real. And this is going to sound insane, but Trump loves asbestos. Let me just, that should be on a bumper sticker. Trump loves asbestos. What, the stuff that killed the 9/11 workers? Yeah, the stuff that probably killed, you know, your dad. You know, if your dad worked around asbestos, yeah, that's, yeah. Yeah, the stuff that's killing people right now, the stuff that people are suing over, he loves that stuff? Yeah. Huh? The headline. Approved by Donald Trump, asbestos sold by a Russian company is branded with the president's face. I saw this story on one of the less reputable websites, and I go, nope, not true. Can't be true. It's the website I saw it on. I'm not going to name it. I've seen things on that website that turned out to be true when they were reported by somebody else, but not by this particular website. So when I saw this, I go, okay, this is one of the stories that is not real, and I am not going to go to the microphone with this freaking story. And then here comes Eli Rosenberg from the Washington Post. Okay, now it's real. Quoting here, a Russian asbestos company that operates a giant mine in the Ural Mountains is marketing its wares with President Trump's image. According to photos it posted on social media, citing former EPA Administrator Scott Pruitt, there he is again, as well as Trump's outspoken support for the carcinogen. The company, Uralasbest, posted photos of the pallets adorned with a seal with Trump's face in the center of its Facebook page. And it says right on it, approved by Donald Trump, the 45th President of the United States. This, according to the seal, that is on the pallets. According to a translation supplied by the Environmental Working Group, a nonprofit focused on human health and the environment, that flagged the posting. Asbestos, a fibrous silicate material that was used widely in industrial and commercial purposes, such as construction in the United States, has fallen out of favor in many applications after a large body of scientific evidence connected exposure to serious health concerns. Its use is restricted in the United States, though it has never been outright banned, as it has been in at least 60 other countries. But Trump loves asbestos. Trump has long expressed skepticism about its potential health effects after it's applied, of course, because we have science telling us that it's bad for you, and science is bad. In his 1997 book, The Art of the Comeback, he wrote that he believed that the anti-asbestos efforts were led by the mob. In 2012, he tweeted that the World Trade Center would not have burned down had asbestos, which is known for its fire-resistant properties, not been removed from the towers. The asbestos company focused on this supportive stance in a post accompanying the pictures. The use of asbestos in the United States has decreased dramatically in recent decades, as links to health effects such as mesothelioma and lung cancer have come into focus. Because it is no longer mined in the United States, asbestos is imported for its remaining uses, primarily the chlor-alkali industry.
My people came to me, Dan Coats came to me and some others. They said they think it's Russia. I have President Putin. He just said it's not Russia. I will say this. I don't see any reason why it would be, but I really do want to see the server. But I have confidence in both parties.
If you are a Republican in the United States, you're likely not listening to this show. But if you are, I just want you to ask yourself, what exactly do you stand for? I tell this a lot. I say this a lot, but I want to point it out again. How much Republicans freaked out when Obama was president because they were so afraid. I remember Glenn Beck used to run World War II footage behind him of Nazis marching whenever he talked about Obama, because Obama, the black guy, was clearly Hitler. Clearly Hitler. I mean, there's no mistaking it. He's Hitler. And of course, they used the hammer and sickle against Obama. They said, hammer and sickle, Obama's a socialist, hammer and sickle, Russia, Russia, Russia. But now that Trump is in bed with the Russians, now that he is fulfilling Putin's wish list, and now that this asbestos company in Russia is selling bags of asbestos with the president's picture on it, and it says, approved by the 45th president of the United States. Now we're okay with Russia. And now that we got Nazis marching in the street, those aren't really Nazis. Obama was a Nazi. Those aren't really Nazis. Those are just freedom fighters. You got to ask yourself, if you are a conservative in the United States, what do you really stand for? Tell you what, in Russia, they're not all that confused. They know exactly where they're at. They know exactly what they stand for. They know that they don't like the United States being a democracy. They don't like us being a part of NATO, because, my God, they hate democratic bodies. And they really like to take us over. That would just be fantastic for them. What do you really stand for? I asked this after reading this headline. Nearly half of Republicans think that Trump should be able to close news outlets. This according to a poll. 52% would support. These are Trump supporters. 52% would support postponing the 2020 election. That according to USA Today. Nearly half of Republicans surveyed, 44%, believe that the president should be able to shutter news outlets for bad behavior. This according to a poll released by Ipsos. Now, hold on. I remember hearing tons of speculation about Obama wanted to be an imperial president. Obama wanted to be president for life. Obama's never ever going to leave the presidency because he's a dictator. But now that you've got your guy in there, by the way, it's not 100%. Now that you've got a Republican in there who supports Russia and none of our other allies, and of course supports white supremacy, and has shown that he has a deep, deep love for the Nazi movement. Now we're okay with that guy, for whatever reason, becoming president for life. If you're a Republican, you've got to ask yourself, what do you really believe in? Or do you even know?
I have a very good relationship with President Xi of China. He's, you know, an incredible guy. They just, you know, essentially president for life. Yeah. It's pretty good.
And I want to leave you with this, just because I just want to go out on kind of an insane note. of course, I didn't get to everything I wanted to get through this week. That's fine. I will see you again next week, hopefully. DJ season is kind of winding down a little bit. I'll be able to be on the mic a little bit more. But quoting here by David Brennan over at Newsweek, former White House aide Omarosa Manigault Newman, who, by the way, I do not like, never liked, and I still don't like. But here we go. Has said that she walked in on President Donald Trump eating paper after a meeting with Michael Cohen in what she believed was an effort to destroy sensitive information. In her new book, Unhinged, an insider account of the Trump White House, Newman makes a series of disturbing and amusing allegations about the president's conduct. According to an excerpt above the book obtained by the Washington Post, Newman recalls, "I saw him put a note in his mouth. Since Trump was ever the germaphobe, I was shocked that he appeared to be chewing and swallowing the paper. It must have been very, very sensitive." So I've mentioned this before. There's a group of people in the White House, because the president reads something, tears it up, throws it on the floor, because he's a jerk. There's a group of people in the White House where all they do so that presidential records can be maintained is they tape this stuff back together, right? They pick it up off tape, and he saw that, and he goes, oh. And so what he's taken to doing now is eating the damn paper. Now, this sounds salacious. This sounds unreal. This sounds like no freaking way this is happening. But here's the problem with Omarosa Manigault Newman. She's got audio. She's got video. She's got texts. And we are into a whole new effing world right now that we never saw coming. Man. You know, Mr. President, if you eat newspaper, it dissolves a lot faster. Just saying. Thank you for being here on The Fire You Can't Put Out. Official homes, tfycpo.podbean.com. Like us on Facebook at facebook.com/tfycpo. You can listen on the go. Just download the Podbean app at the iTunes Store or the Google Play Store for Android users. Individual episodes are available for download at the iTunes Store or on Podbean. Just search for The Fire You Can't Put Out there. You can also subscribe so that you never miss an episode. Questions, comments, hate mail, just a general statement or agree. Hey. You can email us at tfycpo@gmail.com. We work hard to not only inform and entertain, but also to keep an open dialogue with our growing listener base. So feel free to reach out to us. And as always, thanks for listening. We're the fire you can't put out, and we will prevail. Rejecting austerity in favor of prosperity. Special thanks to Kevin. Yeah, that's you, son, for producing. And thank you for listening. This is Mel, signing off. Now that I've woken you up, try not to eat any paper. Good morning.